Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, thanks for listening in. This is Connecting Faith. Our goal on the program day by day is to find ways that we can apply a biblical worldview or biblical principles to a daily life situation. And I think today will be one that if you're a parent or a young adult, I guess it doesn't really matter what your age, if you your workable thumbs, probably Ted, this might be an important conversation for you.
So. Yeah, you wait. Oh, I'm just finishing up here.
Okay, sure.
There we go. I can have your full attention now.
Sure.
I can give that to you.
Sure. We got a good conversation today, a guest that we're bringing back. We've talked, I think, a couple of times over the past few years, and just seemed like summertime is a good time to have this conversation. And just do want to mention, by the way, you know, if you've heard programs on Connecting Faith in the past that you want to hear again or pass on to a friend, I mean, we've got an archive just full of great audio and wonderful posts, and I just encourage you to check out the website, myfaithradio.com. We're just sitting in a meeting this morning, Ted, just seeing how many people are really availing themselves of all the resources there.
Yeah.
So it really is a wonderful resource, and just to recommend it to you. So.
And the way listeners are reaching out to each other, too, based on some comments and posts, and it can really be a great online community for just the body of faith coming together.
Yeah, so check it out, myfaithradio.com. When you go there, a couple things just to point out. We still have our partnership with FEBC going on through the week, through this into early next week. And again, for $30, you can help place a radio in the hands of someone who will use it to hear God's word in oftentimes really strategic places and communities in the Pacific Rim. So thank you for partnering in that way with us. And also, there's a new study Bible that we're giving away this month with commentary from Joe Briscoe. So you can sign up for that online as well. Let's get to today's conversation as we talk Hooked on Games. That's the title. Written by our guest today, Dr. Andrew Doan. He's a recovering video game addict, and he's a recognized expert in technology and video game addiction. He has a doctoral degree in neuroscience. His background is in molecular neuroscience, and that adds to the depth of knowledge in the areas of internet addiction, video game addiction, and technology addiction. And he's authored the book Hooked on Games. You can find out more about his writing and some great resources on the website realbattle.org, realbattle.org. Dr. Doan, good to have you on again. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Today, before we hear a little bit about your story, and it's a pretty captivating one, and I want to just review, but maybe just to start out with a little bit about statistics. Even if we need to define, I guess most of us know what video games are, but sort of who plays them, how many, how big the industry, some of those things.
Yeah, let me make it very clear that, actually gaming or video gaming can be very healthy. Andrew Shabilsky out of the UK published a landmark paper in the journal Pediatrics showing that kids who play 1 hour or less a day actually are healthier in terms of emotional health and behavioral health than kids who don't play at all. But the fascinating thing is that when kids start playing more than 3 hours daily, that's when the positive effects of video gaming diminish, and then you start getting problems like depression and anxiety and attitude problems and failure to thrive and failure to succeed in school. And so if you look at the population, I'd say 95% of kids play video games. If you look at the addiction rate in terms of how we define addiction, not in terms of the amount of time, but the ramifications of an addictive behavior, such as not doing their chores, skipping homework, lying about playing video games to escape, spending all their money and time and effort, having relationships suffer. That's about 1 in 11 kids. So you're talking about 9% of the population falls into the addictive range. So you look at the research out of Iowa State by Dr. Douglas Gentile, he shows that in America, that's about 3 million kids, 8 to 18.
That's still a bunch. And, I guess as the parents, we want to, and maybe just to, guard us as adults as well, that we want to make sure that we're kind of keeping things in check. And I know that was an issue for you, wasn't it? Why don't we just take a little time to kind of review your story and how it began for you, and that you were a full-blown addict, weren't you?
Well, you know, I became addicted as an adult, which is different than an addict as a child. And right now I work for the U.S. Navy, and I'm head of addictions and resilience research. I do a lot of research in this area because it's starting to affect our service members and our military member families. And for me, being addicted as an adult, it's a little bit different than the kids, and we can touch base on that later in the show. But for me, what drew me in was the online play. So out of Stanford, Dr. Nick Yee shows that the three elements that make gaming super highly attractive are the following: the achievement, the immersion, as well as the social interaction. The internet brought in the social interaction. So I played games during high school and during junior high. You know, I played the Atari 2600, the Commodore 64, you know, the Nintendo, the Sega. I had all those systems, but I was also a three sports letterman. I was the vice president of my junior high class as a freshman. Then, you know, I developed all these social skills. The gaming did not pull me away from my social life. However, when I was in medical school, it became stressful. I was married with my wife at the time, and we had two young children. I had a lot of stress involved in my research not going as well, my PhD at Johns Hopkins. I had difficulty struggling with dealing with that stress. And so I used video gaming as my quote-unquote drug of choice for escape. And so it was the online play that pulled me in. So I love online real-time strategy games like Warcraft 2 and Starcraft. I love the role-playing games like Diablo and Ashram's Call and Ultima Online, and then ultimately World of Warcraft. So it was my form of escape. And the way I describe it for parents to understand is that at the University of Washington, researchers and clinicians are using video gaming to numb pain and burn victims. So they can actually wear a virtual reality set of glasses and play a game called Snow World. And these virtual reality glasses are similar to what Oculus Rift is trying to launch on a mainstream basis, so that you are fully immersive in the game. So remember, I said achievement, immersion, and social interaction causes the body to respond in a way that releases hormones and neuroendocrine hormones that release painkillers. And so in these patients, when they have burns, while they're playing this game called Snow World, the nurses can literally scrub their burns, rip off bandages off of their burns while they're playing the game. So in a way, the gamer who is addicted is using the game kind of like a digital narcotic as a painkiller to try to escape life, to numb their pain, to deal with stress.
Wow, that is pretty fascinating research. Dr. Andrew Doan is in the middle of all sorts of research in this area as we focus on gaming. We can hear a bit more of your story as well as we go along, but I want to go back to maybe just to kids, particularly in the summertime. I mean, school's out, kids are off school. Is summertime a higher time of use of gaming? Or is it just kind of screen time in general? Is someone who's really into it is going to do it all year long?
Well, it's both, actually. But in the summer, there's higher risk for binging because the kids have more time. And we have a national crisis right now. We are scared to send our kids out to play in the neighborhood. We don't send them out to play, you know, stickball in the park and meet up with other kids and play because we're afraid of strangers and predators. And the sad thing is that we're keeping them inside thinking that they're safer. And as a result, they're bored. They don't know what to do. And we're afraid to let them be bored, because if they're bored, they actually will find creative things to do, but we want to entertain them. And so in the summer, there's a higher risk of kids being locked up in their houses, and the only thing they have is the outlet, which is on the internet or video games. And as a result, we're probably seeing a lot of kids who are developing addictive behaviors because their parents are just afraid to let them go outside and play.
And when you talk about developing addictive behaviors, is this something where we already have sort of the the behaviors there sort of latent and video gaming brings it out, or does gaming actually sort of lead to addictive behaviors?
We definitely need more research to answer that question, but the answer is actually both. So certain kids have that addictive personality. And the way I describe it is that the addictive personality is just the go-getter personality, because those are the types of people who are type A. They are risk-takers. They like adventures. They want to take on challenges. And so as a result, if you have a go-getter or an addictive personality and you don't direct that person to positive social activities, they may find an addictive behavior to abuse in order to facilitate their escape or stress management. That leads to an addict. But if you take the same person and direct them to healthy activities, now you get somebody who is on the brink of being a great leader or a amazing person in society that can contribute to the whole. But in kids, if you expose them to a, let's say, alcohol or a drug or a substance that's potentially addicting at an early age, and teach them how to use that substance to facilitate stress management and escape the consequences, that you can make a person without that genetic predisposition into a person who could become an addict through a behavior environmental setting.
We thinking about go-getters and somehow our perspective of those that would be spending too much time gaming and maybe as a result weight gain or poor health and stuff doesn't seem like that goes with that. But I know that you experienced it as an adult, issues, your health was affected. Is that a concern for someone that becomes addicted in gaming, like any other addiction, that health is going to suffer at some point?
That's a great question. Absolutely. So you remember how I said that the gaming can be like a pain-killing aspect? We have stories of 20-year-old men who are dying from deep vein thrombosis because they're playing Xbox for 10, 15 hours at a time, and that causes stasis or the blood to collect in their lower extremities. Because they don't feel the pain or the numbness in their legs because of the pain-killing aspect of the game, they are developing deep vein thromboses, and some are dying from pulmonary embolism. So that's an extreme case of how health can be affected. On the moderate side, or the less severe side, there's weight gain, there's poor nutrition, there's also lack of exercise, because you're trading time for something else. So if you're gaming, let's say even, the 3 to 5 hours a day, which doesn't seem very much compared to the national average of the Kaiser Foundation in 2010 found that the average child using 7 hours, 38 minutes a day in terms of screen entertainment daily, 3 to 5 hours doesn't seem a lot, but that's 3 to 5 hours of potential working out or developing in an athletic ability. So absolutely, health be affected. And in Asian countries, now we're seeing poor nutrition to the point where people are dying in front of their computers. So there are gamers who play in internet cafes, and because of the lack of nutrition and care for their bodies, these gamers can play 40 hours straight sometimes and literally die from electrolyte imbalance or physical exhaustion.
Wow. I think if you're at a cafe, you could find something to eat. But that's a whole different story. We're talking today with Dr. Andrew Doan. We're going to take a quick break and come back and hear more of his story and offer some encouragement and some advice as we talk about Hooked on Games. That's the title of a book that Andrew has written, co-written, and he has a research background in neuroscience. He's battled his own addictions in video games. And at his peak, invested over 20,000 hours of playing games over a period of 9 years. He's got a great story to tell. Cares about this area a lot. You can find out more about some practical helps online, realbattle.org, realbattle.org. It may be that you have someone in your family that you're concerned about in terms of gaming use. You'd just like to get some advice on guidelines. We'll talk about it next. You can join the conversation at 877-933-2484. Love to hear your story. 877-933-2484. Put down the controller. Give us a call. 877-93-FAITH. My guest today is Dr. Andrew Doan. He is a return guest here to Connecting Faith. Appreciate the conversation we've had in the past, and I look forward to more here in the hour ahead. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number if you have some questions or comments about the whole area of gaming, and particularly when it leads to addictive behaviors. Dr. Doan is a recovering video game addict and a recognized expert in the technology and video game addiction. He has a doctoral degree in neuroscience, actually working with the Navy, the military, at this time as well. Some of his assignments just to help in this area of gaming addiction was on the campus of the University of Northwestern, I think, last year when we talked. Travels the country talking about this area. You can find more about his writings and some of the research on this area and some helpful insights at realbattle.org, realbattle.org. He's authored the book Hooked on Games. I was interested, just when we're going to the break, playing that little bumper music. It sounded like it was a sort of video gaming theme music. I'm curious, do the video game soundtracks all sort of sound the same? Is there a reason that they sound maybe the way they do?
You know, that's a fascinating question. The research shows, not my research, but in the peer-reviewed research literature, there are research laboratories that have demonstrated the addition of immersive music into the video game actually increases cortisol levels from the adrenal gland. So the way I describe it is that the video game, through vision, through hearing, through touch, through the sensory inputs in the brain, turns on the brain by releasing feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine and catecholamines. But the downstream effect below the brain, through the hypothalamus, things are being stimulated, like for example, corticotropin-releasing hormone, to stimulate the pituitary gland to ultimately stimulate the adrenals and even the gonads to secrete hormones into the body. So that's what gets us excited. That's what gets the kid's blood pressure shooting upwards after 20 to 30 minutes of play. That's what gets us sweaty palms when we're playing on the Xbox. It's basically a simulator to prepare our body to fight or flight.
Which maybe we can come back to that, I guess, when we think a little bit about military. I mean, military may be using video gaming for training. Obviously, there's a lot of drone flying going on, which is kind of real life video game. But I'm wondering if is video gaming a suitable activity for summer parties, sleepovers, group events? You said at the outset that there are some benefits, but are there some guidelines then if we want to let kids just have a good time this summer on it?
Absolutely. So I believe that everything in moderation is healthy. In the scriptures, it says everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial, meaning that God gave us things to help us through life, right, and even video games. And so video games, without a question of a doubt, that basically will enhance your neural pathways for, say, increasing hand-eye coordination, like you mentioned. So, for example, we have research to show that gamers who play video games and become surgeons or doctors later on, they are better laparoscopic and microscopic surgeons than their attending or teacher physicians who don't play video games at all. So what's interesting about this is that if you want to let your kids play video games, the best way to do it is in a social group with limitations. So, for example, at a birthday party, get a game truck, but let them play half an hour together, but make sure that the time is not all about video games. Look for kids with signs of addictions. I was at a recent party to share the story in our ministry, and there was a 17-year-old daughter of a family struggling with internet gaming disorder, and the daughter the entire time was on her laptop playing by herself with headphones during this dinner party. That would be a problem. So if you recognize kids within the party that are isolated, that are definitely, showing signs of addiction, then that is where things need to be addressed. And perhaps, intervention are necessary in order to help that child.
You know, you mentioned daughter. I guess, you know, somehow we think this maybe is a boy's or a man's issue. Is there a gender, ethnicity, age kind of thing? Some statistics about video gaming addictions?
You know, up to this point, more young men are affected than women. But now we are seeing more women being affected because the types of games that are available are now becoming more appealing to women. So typically in the past, the young men and boys were more interested in war games and those types of real-time strategy and role-playing games. But as the game developed into more relationship-type games and relational games, it's now attracting more women and young ladies.
And I assume this is something maybe where the age continues to go down, right? I mean, as more kids get screens younger and younger.
Yes, absolutely. So the problem when you look at this is that the National Institutes of Mental Health had a 10-year brain study where looking at the development of brains. And what they showed was that the brain does not fully develop until a child or a young person is 25 years old. The problem is before age 12, the brain is relatively unprogrammed. And so it looks really young and what we call unpruned. As it passes 12, the pruning then advances into the frontal cortex where higher executive functions are being controlled. The problem is if you prime the pump of addictive behaviors before the age of 12, let's say you make a four-year-old into a gaming addict by overexposure with games and screen times, there's a higher risk that that child may carry that addictive behaviors into his or her teenage years as well as, you know, adulthood.
Fascinating discussion. You may have a question about the whole area of gaming. The industry is a billion-dollar industry, booming. Millions of people are playing, and some are addicted. And maybe you're concerned about your kids' activity with it, or maybe a spouse you're wondering about, or maybe yourself, and you'd like to just talk it through, get some help today, some good practical advice on the way as well. Dr. Andrew Doan, who has a ministry called Real Battle. You can find out online, realbattle.org. He has co-authored the book called Hooked on Games. Dr. Doan is a physician with a research background in neuroscience who battled his own addiction with video games and has shared some ways for us to achieve recovery. We'll get into that coming up. Want to get back to we'll talk a little bit about phone apps since we last talked. It seems like it's a explosion of phone apps. I'm wondering how that has maybe affected how people are playing. I'm going to get into issues that he's working with servicemen. Talk about that. Are there some connections to violence? So what are we finding out there? And who's monitoring the industry? All those things. You might have a question or two as well. Join us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient and want to just drop us a note, go to myfaithradio.com. You click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. You can submit your question or comment that way as well. And we'll talk more with Dr. Andrew Doan in just a moment. Oh, man. No. I was never really into it. No.
Not even Pac-Man?
No. We kind of came in late to the party or something. My boys and I, we got into Madden football.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then I couldn't compete at that. So we tried Gran Turismo, and turns out I wasn't any good at that either.
But that was it.
Yeah. But yes, it can be a lot of fun, but it can that fun can be taken too far. We're talking about it. What happens when you get hooked on games? That's the title of a fascinating book by Dr. Andrew Doan, who's a physician with a research background in neuroscience. He battled his own addictions with video games. He's an ophthalmologist by trade, but does surgery, does a great deal of study in this whole area of brain science and research and addictive behaviors, and we're talking about it today. You can find out more about the ministry side of his work at realbattle.org, realbattle.org, and he travels great deal of time just speaking about this issue. And I'm interested, one of our regular callers, Frank, had asked about, Dr. Doan, about the U.S. Army using video games as a way of desensitizing them to violence. Wonder if you can speak to that. And then wonder if you can talk a little bit about the what is the connection between maybe video games and violence?
I just have to say that my disclaimer is that I'm active duty, so anything I say today reflects my own opinion and that not the Department of Defense. Sure. And so given that disclaimer, I would say that, yes, we use video games as a way to train military service members for scenarios in war. And so however you want to look at that is whether it's desensitization or preparing them emotionally to handle the stress of war. Absolutely. It's a very effective training tool. But on the flip side, we also use violent video games as a way to desensitize service members when they suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's called immersion therapy. So it's not like the Call of Duty or the types of first-person shooter you're thinking of, but in these types of software scenarios or virtual reality scenarios, the service members who suffered from, let's say, explosive concussions and post-traumatic stress disorders related to explosions may go through this immersive therapy where they're walking through a virtual world with explosions and scenarios similar to what they suffered from, so that we can desensitize them and basically reprogram their behavior responses to reduce the effect of PTSD. So it actually can be clinically therapeutic as well as preparing someone emotionally and prepare them physically and hand-eye coordination-wise for wartime scenarios.
But of course, I guess, as you mentioned, Call of Duty, I mean, there is some concern, right, about some of the violence in these games, right, and that long-term those will have some effects.
Absolutely. So Dr. Bushman out of Ohio State, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gentile out of Iowa State, and also the Surgeon General of the United States published huge amounts of research showing that there are influences of violent video games on behaviors. Now, the way I basically communicate this to people is that, remember, 1 in 11 are addicted. 10 and 11 can handle it. So the data is going to be, if you look at a large population, not all violent video games are going to cause severe aggression and severe problems. However, if you study the 1 in 11 that are addicted, that those violent video games may have more an effect on those populations of people than the 10-11. So you can't really look at in the United States, let's say there's 100 million people play video games. If we study all 100 million, we're going to see, okay, they can handle it because there are 90 million healthy. But 10 million who are addicted are going to have problems. And here's an example. We just got a paper that's coming out in military medicine, and this is based on our case study, so I can actually talk about this freely. But these Marines came to us and they had sleep deprivation problems because of excessive gaming. They were gaming up to 60 hours a week on top of their full-time job. And so they had insomnia. So they were trading sleep for game time. But one Marine had a underlying mental illness. And so he actually had homicidal thoughts. And so in the paper, we discussed how the Marine shared with us that he wanted to cut people's heads off, that the violent video games were helping him imagine how to do so, and that he was basically spiraling upwards into this homicidal state. What really helped him was to take away the games, to make him realize the games were making him stay up later than he should because he was playing 60 hours a week on top of his full-time job. When he got more sleep, when he got away from the violent video games, his homicidal thoughts actually disappeared. It was not the medications. It was not anything else that we gave him. It was the pure taking him away from that addictive behavior and allowing him to sleep that allowed him to come back down to a baseline where medications can help deal with his mental illness.
We're talking about addictive behaviors, and it's one of the big addictions that many are faced with is porn addiction, and I know there's maybe some connection there too, because it seems like some of the games have become pretty graphic, right?
Absolutely. So in substance abuse, we call it like media. or like substances. Like, for example, marijuana can be the gateway drug to cocaine and heroin and methamphetamines. So when you're dealing with the brain in terms of looking at things to turn the body on, you remember I said that video games, when you look at it, hear it, touch it, in terms of the joystick and the controllers, the tactile feedback, that feeds the sensory organs in your body to release more hormones, like the adrenal gland. So, for example, if you have a game that has sexually explicit materials, like Grand Theft Auto, where people can actually go and interact with prostitutes in the game, that could actually stimulate those desires so that now it's a another click away from full-blown use of pornography. So we are now publishing a paper in the Yale Biology Medical Journal that's coming out in the fall on addictive behaviors. In that journal, we talk about a video game addict who actually we were able to treat the video game addiction, but then when we treated the video game addiction, he switched over to porn addiction, and that became his addictive behavior in order to cope with life and his sexual release. We now have more evidence that basically gamers who are playing excessive games are also using pornography excessively, which also affects them physiologically and emotionally as well.
Well, we're going to take Laura's call. She's calling from Burnsville and has a 14-year-old son, and I'm sure is asking the question that a lot of listeners want to know. Laura, you're on with Andrew Doan. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. Yes, I have a 14-year-old son who's been playing games since he's been about 3, and he is addicted. He has that staying up late, having to have technology in his hand at all times kind of syndrome, and wondering how we can wean him off this, break this addiction.
Okay, so the question that I have first is that if your son is aggressive, has suicidal ideation, meaning that he has a tendency to, you know, may hurt himself, if he has underlying depression or anxiety, I recommend professional help, because taking the games away could precipitate self-harm and also could elicit anger to the point where he could harm the family, especially when you're talking about a 14-year-old child. Now, if he has none of that, then if you feel comfortable taking the gaming away, then I would recommend, you know, weaning him down. That always helps. So there's two approaches to this. So you can actually do a cold turkey approach, which is actually more severe on the psyche. So emotionally and physiologically, he'll go through withdrawals. So that is really severe. So you can do cold turkey or wean him down. So when we had a son who was addicted because of my addictive behavior in the past, my 13-year-old son was addicted to Call of Duty. We caught him getting up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. to play. He would then pontificate on this game Monday through Friday. So what we did, we start weaning him down. So we made rules where you can play 1 hour a day, and then basically after a while, he still didn't have his grades up. He still didn't do his chores. He didn't fulfill the requirements. So having a contract written out on his obligations is very helpful. But what happens is you can't moderate an addict. So it's really hard to wean people down because they still kind of prime the pump for the addictive behavior. So what happened with my son is then after a while, let's wait, you know, a couple months, we then cut him down to only the weekend. So you only play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. He still exhibited, even with 3 hours a week, addictive behaviors because he would then dream and talk about the game Monday through Friday. Even though he can't play, he would be searching YouTube. He was doing all this other stuff. At that point, when we weaned him out enough, we finally took everything away. When we took everything away at the age of 14, he didn't know what to do with himself. So we let him be bored. So he actually found other things he was interested in. So he found track and field. He started running for his team in high school. And we never would have found out that he was a fast runner. Within 1 year of running, he was running a 4:11 mile and a 2 mile 9:05. Within that year, he was able to sign on to an athletic scholarship at the University of Portland, and he's a Division I runner now. So you can look up his story at nick-doan.com. But he's an amazing glimmer of hope for kids because, you know, here we have this gaming addict who we took away his games, and within a year, he was able to find out what God has programmed in his genetics for him to do, which is to run fast. And so that's my encouragement, is that if you have an addictive child, you have to figure out a way, either cold turkey or through weaning him off, to get him off the game so that he can find what he was made to do in this world other than gaming.
What do you recommend if a spouse has a different view on maybe the guidelines or the strategies? Mom's away, dad says, kids, go ahead and play, or, you know, whatever it might be.
You know, I think the best thing to do is probably read my book and look at my videos. So if the listeners out there want to get my book, it's on Amazon. But if you I'll email it to you for free. So just go to andrew-doan.com. Use the contact form and email me your email address, and I will send you a PDF copy of my book, and then you read it together. And then also I suggest that you go to realbattle.org, go to the top for seminars. My online seminars are all available on YouTube. So anytime I have a seminar, I tape it and put it on YouTube. Pick a video that's appropriate. So if you are a believer, then pick one where it's a Christ-centered approach. If you're not a believer, then pick one of the secular talks that I have on there, and basically watch it together with your spouse, read the book with an open mind, and then watch the videos and then discuss, you know, the situation. Because once, if you look at the data on the child or the family member, it's hard to deny addictions because it's defined by the ramifications. Like I said, it's not about time, it's about dysfunction, right? So if the child exhibits lying behavior, skipping chores, not doing homework, basically relationships are hurting, trading activities that they used to like, now only for gaming, these are questions that are discussed in the book that you can actually go through with your spouse and then basically then come to an agreement on the plan. And if the plan doesn't work, don't try to do the same thing over and over. You need to switch the plan, and then ultimately be open to getting professional help, because there are now mental health providers who are more aware of internet gaming disorder and will help. But you need to interview the mental health providers, because this is not a DSM or Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Mental Disorder official diagnosis yet. It's in the DSM-5 as something that needs to be studied more in the appendix. So there are still mental health providers who are still not up to speed on this as being addictive behavior. So you need to interview that person who's going to help your child and family to make sure they're on board with internet gaming disorder. And if that all fails, you may have to send them to a rehab center. We have two here in the United States, one ran by Dr. Kimler Young on the East Coast in Pennsylvania, and the other ran by Cosette Ray and Dr. Hillary Cash out in Washington.
Good advice and encouragement today from Dr. Andrew Doan, who is an ophthalmologist, a surgeon. He's has a doctoral degree in neuroscience. Background is in molecular neuroscience, and is a recovering video game addict, and has written about this in the book Hooked on Games. And again, you can find that at his website, andrew.doan, D-O-A-N.com. Find out about some of his speaking and the teaching. You can go to realbattle.org, realbattle.org. And we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. Get your questions, comments. The number is 877-933-2484. Talking video games today, particularly the addictive behavior of video games and those that are addicted and get to some recovery issues. Dr. Andrew Doan was one of those. He became addicted as a gamer, as an adult, affected his life, family, marriage, his work, his health. It's a pretty powerful story he's spelled out in the book that he's written on it called Hooked on Games. And he is has a doctoral degree in neuroscience. He's an ophthalmologist. Surgeon. He's working with the military to help in study more about research, what's going on with gaming. I have a listener with a question about a 31-year-old who wants to know about that. But I'm interested, before we get to her question, I think since we last talked, you know, phone apps have exploded. Are you seeing maybe different use or gaming in different ways because of the phone?
Absolutely. We just published a paper in JAMA Internal Medicine and went worldwide on this. And this was on a case of a gamer who was not addicted, but he was playing Candy Crush on his smartphone because he was trying to save money because he was between jobs. He was a military member who basically was transitioning from the U.S. Navy into civilian employment, but he had several months where he was not being paid. So he wanted to use the gaming as a way to escape the reality that he was running out of money and also to prevent him from going out to basically spending money, you know, by keeping him inside the house. So he's playing Candy Crush for 6 to 8 hours on his phone. So if you move your thumb back and forth, that's called basically for people with excessive use syndrome, it's been known as like a BlackBerry thumb or a texting thumb. You can feel the tendon on the back of the thumb getting worn out because it's clicking over the bone. Well, you remember how I said that gaming at the University of Washington is being used to numb burn pain so that burn patients can be treated for their burns. He feels the pain as his tendon is being worn out. So that repetitive use eventually led to rupture of his thumb tendon completely. Mm. And so with the phones, because of the apps, gaming is everywhere. So in the time that I was addicted to gaming, I had to be tied to a modem. I had to have basically a computer. But if I could bring my computer with me, gaming can be incredibly dangerous because it's everywhere and anywhere.
Hmm. Ted, I just want to check your thumb, see how you're doing. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's my finger.
That's your finger. Yeah. You know, it's just, I mean, it's a joke about it, but it is really serious. I mean, it does have those that are addicted like any other addiction. I mean, it does have a cost to families and societies and everything, doesn't it? I mean, you mentioned just the lack of sleep for one thing.
Absolutely. You know, for the longest time, because when I was addicted, I was going through 10 years of gaming where I was gaming 50 to up to 100 hours a week. I trained my brain to only sleep 2 to 3 hours at night. I was considered a functional addict because I made it through an 8-year MD-PhD program at Johns Hopkins. I was able to hold it together during my internship and during my ophthalmology residency. So outside the home, I looked quote-unquote functional, but always sleep-deprived. But that was expected for a medical student and a medical doctor who would call all the time. But at home, because I was sleep-deprived, I was raging. I was short with my wife and my kids. I should have had Child Protective Services called on me. My wife actually slapped on a restraining order for my abusive behavior. And so the point is that because when our brains don't get to sleep, we get really irritated and agitated. We see that in our children and our family members too. So now fast forward, after being recovered, literally over the last like 11 years since I stopped playing games addictively, now my brain is reprogrammed to sleep. And people now kind of joke around that I don't need to sleep a lot, that I have high energy, which is true. I have high energy and I'm able to get by on little sleep. But now I sleep 7 to 8 hours a night, sometimes 9 hours, and I feel so much better. My speech is slower and my tolerance and resilience is much higher.
Mm. Good. Just hopefully people even over this weekend will find a little extra time to sleep. Take a nap if you can. So Jane called with her question. She says, I have a 31-year-old addicted to gaming. He works nights. His social interaction is minimal. So what can be done when they're adults and addicted? Is there anything that we can do as his family? It's hard to know what to do. His son doesn't live at home, so he's on his own. I'm sure there's many in that same camp wondering what to do.
So if you have an adult child living with you in your home, my recommendation is that you don't enable that addictive behavior. So don't make them food. Don't pay for the utilities. Don't pay for the internet, because without the internet, it's really hard to game addictively. You remember Nick Yee said, basically there's three, Dr. Yee said there's three elements, immersion, achievement, and social interaction. The internet connection is the key to that addictive third element of gaming addiction. So basically don't enable. But if you have an adult child who's basically working and is that functional quote-unquote addict, then therefore the best thing to do is probably get my book, come to my website. You don't want to pay for it because, you know, the child probably won't pay for it, or the 31-year-old won't pay for it, and just email me. So andrew-doan.com, I'll email you my PDF book, read together. And then go to realbattle.org, go to the seminars where there's videos, and pick a video where it's appropriate that you can watch together. I have one that explains gaming addiction to the point in about 20 minutes. And so, therefore, read the book, watch the video, and then have a discussion where you come with now knowledge. So you have authority, you have confidence that this is a true addiction, but most importantly, you come with love. You come with the love that you care about that person, that you're concerned about that person, and discuss in a way that's non-judgmental and say that perhaps this could be an addiction that's leading to destruction of life potential. And therefore, let's consider alternative options and alternative pathways for that person. I think that's probably the best way to do it, because with an adult, you can't do anything unless they are willing to accept that they're powerless over their addictive behaviors and that they need help.
Is it andrew.doan or andrew-doan?
andrew-doan.com.
andrew-doan.com. Very good. Okay. You know, it reminded me that there's, you know, probably a lot of you know, potential mates out there, you know, looking to, you know, I'd like to find a guy that I could, you know, I could get in a relationship with, but they're playing video games every night or something. I'm sure that there is some social issues affected there too.
Absolutely. So go to YouTube and search a TED Talk by Dr. Zimbardo. Zimbardo wrote a book called Demise of Guys, or just search the internet on Google for Demise of Guys. Dr. Zimbardo is a Stanford psychology professor. And he has been following the trends of how guys have been failing out of life because of video games and pornography. And one of the statistics that he reports is striking, that for the first time in history, women are graduating more than men from colleges and universities. And we're talking about like a 60-40 split. And a lot of the guys that are failing out of colleges and universities are due to excessive pornography and video game use. And one time I interviewed this really attractive young lady from an Ivy League university, and she shared with me that it's so frustrating for her and other women in college to the point that basically they can't get dates or they can't get guys to ask them out because lots of them will just get together on the weekends and Friday nights and game together. So literally the boys are hanging out, gaming together, rather than asking people out on dates.
We live in an interesting world, an interesting time. Andrew, we only have about 45 seconds left. I'll just give you a chance to maybe just touch on the websites or any final comments you want to leave with us.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, this is a serious problem, and I'm so thankful that you invited me to speak about this. And definitely you have foresight, and you're at the cutting edge of science and medicine. And so what I have to say is that some of you may not listen and believe the data and what I have to share, but, you know, all truth will be revealed with time. And so this is the tip of the iceberg that we're seeing. And as years continue to pass, we're seeing more and more addicts, you know, surface as this addictive behaviors begin to affect, you know, deeper roots.
So find some help, realbattle.org. It's not a video game. It's a real battle. Realbattle.org. Go there. You can also check Andrew's personal website as well. Pick up a copy of the book, Hooked on Games. It's andrew-doan.com. Dr. Doan, great to visit with you today, and blessings on your continued study and research in this area. And as you're working with the military and speak on college campuses around the country, we wish you great audiences to share this important message.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Dr. Andrew Doan joining us today. You want to hear part of the broadcast if you missed it, or pass it on to a friend, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. We'll have links to Andrew's sites as well. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.